Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show, which comes to you online at edexcellence.net. Joining me is my regular co-host, a man whose voice is even deeper than Arne Duncan's, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike. Happy New Year, babe.
And Happy New Year to you, too.
This is our first show of the year.
First show of 2009. Isn't this exciting?
I like 2009 already.
I know. So, Arne Duncan making his appearance this week in Washington at the confirmation hearing, and
most interesting thing about it was that his kids are well-behaved.
And very cute.
Very cute. But that pretty much summarizes what was interesting about the testimony.
That is basically all there was. The big line that Lamar Alexander said that Arne Duncan was Obama's best cabinet pick. That was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Hillary. But yes, not a whole lot of news here. You know, I do want to say something, particularly since we are coming to you via audio. His name is Arne Duncan. Have you noticed that there's an awful lot of people out there calling him Arne Duncan?
I have not.
Well, I have noticed this. I was on a radio show this morning, and the host kept calling him Arne. And I just kept trying to stress, yes, Arne Duncan, blah, 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 blah. So we just want to clear up that, misunderstanding. Mm. It's confusing because, Arne, I guess, typically would be A-R-N-I-E, and he's missing that I, but it's Arne.
He's
now you know.
The
okay, now Rick, I want you to help me with something here. This is going to sound a little bit like a public radio membership campaign pitch here. All right, but we have a new goal for 2009, and it is to expand the audience of the Education Gadfly Show. This is a well kept secret, and those of you that are out there listening, I mean, you are on the inside. You came to the show because you really know what's going on in education, but we'd like more people to know about it. So we're asking for our listeners' help.
For donations?
We're not asking for donations.
We're not.
No. Though, we would take those if people wanted to give us donations. What kind of donations? We want, people's old cars? Is that
thinking money.
Oh, money. Rick.
Glad we got for drinks. We could take the staff out for drinks. Amber's wearing this cowlick thing around her neck. So she's dressed to go out for a cocktail.
It's lovely. That was uncalled.
Cow-lick. That's what it's called.
Cowlick, like an animal, a cow,
C-O-W-L. C-O-W-L.
Okay. Well,
a cowlick is something on your head.
I was misunderstood. But I'm just saying she's dressed to go have a cocktail or two.
You're often
It'd be nice if the listeners provided the resources.
All right, look, we do not want donations, but what we want you to do, listeners, what we're asking for is to tell your friends and colleagues about the Education Gadfly Show. It's that simple. Just send a quick email. There might be people out there that you assume are listening to the Education Gadfly Show, but may not be. For whatever reason, have never heard of the Education Gadfly Show. Haven't ever noticed the link from the Education Gadfly itself. Maybe don't even read the Education Gadfly.
Whoa.
I know. It's hard to believe. So what I'm asking you to do right now as you're listening on your computer, or if you're listening on your iPhone, you could do this. You could listen to the iPhone and send an email at the same time. Just email. Think about it. Who are the 3, 5, 10 people who who might really want to listen to this, and just send a little note. And then the other thing you can do, right for this, Rick?
Okay.
You can become a fan of the Education Gadfly Show on Facebook.
And what would that entail?
I'm not really sure. I'm still trying to learn Facebook myself. You've got to join Facebook, first of all.
Okay.
So, Rick, that's step number one for you.
Okay.
Okay. And then you can search for the Education Gadfly Show on Facebook, and you can become a fan. And then all of your friends will see that you're a fan. They'll say, I wonder what this thing is. Maybe I should become a fan, too.
And do I find this Facebook at my local library?
I'm not even going to go into that with you, Rick. Ha, 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 ha. Okay, enough business. Let's get on to the education policy meat of the show. Christina, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Topic 1. Teachers at Kip Amp Academy in New York City have decided to join the United Federation of Teachers. They allege unionization will reduce teacher turnover by creating more sustainable working conditions. This decision means that 3 of the 4 Kip schools in New York will now have union representation. Is this a death blow to charters?
I think three things. One, it's not a death blow to charters. Two.
Okay, go ahead.
2, charter folks should have seen this coming forever because it was only going to be a question of when and how. It should have never been a question of whether. And third, Well, actually, we can stop there. Mike, why is it a death blow?
All right, maybe not a death blow, but this is a really big deal. Some of the commentary has tried to minimize it. Andy Rotherham, for example, and Edgy Wonk saying, well, you know, we've got Green Dot out there that's a chain of charter schools doing fine, and they're unionized, so it all just matters on the details of the contract. Well, sure, it matters on the details of the contract, but here you have, in New York City, clearly with the backing of the United Federation of Teachers, this school going union, and no reason to believe that they're going to just ask for minimal protections, but that they're going to go whole hog and want to, you know, their whole point was that we want to improve working conditions at the school. I think this could fundamentally take away authority from the leadership.
But again, I mean, I think this was always going to be inevitable. You know, once charter schools achieve critical mass, unions were always going to try to do this. And the reality is, it was always naive and a mistake for proponents of school choice to somehow imagine that this was a silver bullet that was going to sidestep unions or going to break the back of the teacher unions. The question is always going to be, whether it's charter schools or district schools, how do you make sure that you rework contracts so that they permit schools to excel? And how do you push as hard as you need to as management within whatever agreements exist to provide good schooling?
But, you know, Rick, if charter schools are the Googles of education, you know, Google isn't unionized. I mean, there's plenty of innovative private sector employers out there that are not unionized. So
public sector, baby.
Look, the main thing, in my view, that makes charter schools distinct is their autonomy. And that's autonomy from central office dictates and autonomy from the teachers' union contract. So you get rid of at least one of those pieces of the autonomy, I think you've lost
some. At that point, I'm not arguing in the least. But what I am saying, this is always going to happen, and that the charter community was not very good about anticipating and figuring out how to deal with this when it has come. And now we're going to have to see how the charter community responds.
Next topic. The big education news to watch is the stimulus package, which is likely to include upwards of $200 billion to bail out state budgets. Of course, one-third to one-half of state budgets go to K-12 education, so this is the education bailout so many superintendents and teachers' unions have been asking for. But is this a good idea?
Well, this isn't even the beginning of it. I mean, so yes, you've got $200 billion to bail out the state budgets, most likely. So upwards of maybe $100 billion is going to end up going into K-12 budgets. But we just heard today that another $80 billion on top of that might go directly to the schools, plus school construction. I mean, we're talking about bailing out the schools two, three, four times over. Look, this is way more federal money going into local schools than has ever gone in before, much more than goes into Title I or Special Ed or any of these other programs. And the question is, are there going to be strings attached? Is this a good idea? Generally, no. I mean, look, people will argue that if states have to cut their budgets, it's going to be bad for the economy. It might be anti-stimulating. But in terms of education, it would be helpful right now for schools to have to tighten their belts and to have some political cover to get rid of, to basically trim the fat, to let go of staff that are not effective, to let go of programs that are not effective, to consolidate small districts, to do the kinds of things that they do not do when they are flush with cash.
And the reality is that in the last quarter century, nationally, there has never been a point at which school district budgets did not grow year over year in real terms. Even during the last recession, 2000 to 2003, we saw real growth in national school spending every single year, that we have increased the size of the teaching workforce relative to the number of kids by 50% over the last 30 years. We have essentially built in huge expenditures, which make it really hard for us to pay excellent teachers the way we'd like to, or for us to be nimble about the decisions we're making. So a point I do want to make is, look, if somebody wants to buy me a Christmas gift, I'm not going to worry too much about whether it was an efficient use of money. I appreciate it. But if somebody borrows $100 from me to buy me a Christmas gift, then I actually care about that. We're not paying for these investments we're making on our kids' behalf. This is all part of the huge credit card tab of $1.5 trillion, $1.6 trillion that we're running up this year, which our kids and our grandkids are going to get stuck paying off. If we're telling them that we want to spend their money to preserve jobs in the schools, we better make darn sure that they would be happy we spent this money on their behalf. And right now, I am completely unconvinced that they are going to look back and say, gee, thanks, guys, that was money well spent.
I think the kids would rather have a gift certificate to iTunes. Okay, Christina, number three.
Robin Lake from the Center on Reinventing Public Education has a guest piece in this week's Gadfly arguing that President Bush was bad for charter schools. Fair assessment?
Mike, you're part of the community. Where do you come?
She's just piling on the president as he leaves office. Don't you like that?
And you guys published it, huh?
We did publish it, so we're piling on as well. Look, he got to pile on a little bit. I mean, he had the audacity to make his last policy speech about education, No Child Left Behind, and still wants that to be seen as a very positive part of his legacy. I'm not so sure about that. But look, on the charter school front, I think Robin Lake's argument is in some ways fair, in some ways unfair. I mean, her main beef is that the No Child Left Behind Act has been bad for charter schools, and I would agree that in many ways it has. And first by this highly qualified teacher provision, which hamstrings staffing decisions at charter schools, and second, by building into the law this provision that failing schools could be converted to charter schools, which kind of feeds this idea that NCLB was a plot to privatize public schools and drags charter schools into that privatization morass. That's all very interesting, but some of the implications that basically any Republican that supports charter schools is hurting charter schools. This is starting to make me a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And you and I, in a piece that's coming out next month in Policy Review, point out that actually the Bush years have been broadly good for educational entrepreneurship, whether it's human capital or school operations or what have you. I think in many ways this has been despite some of the administration's actions. One of the real problems here has been that the focus of No Child Left Behind on grade 3 to 8 reading and math assessment in terms of achievement levels has created some real problems for charter schools that are trying to serve kids whose achievement levels aren't real reflective of the value the school is adding. But I think what Robin has done, what I think is very useful about her piece, is she points out some of these tensions where folks either tend to bewail the Bush administration's effect on education or celebrate it, like we saw in Margaret Spelling's op-ed in the Washington Post this week. And I think what Robin's done is point out that as you unpack it, the reality is that this has been good and bad, and it's important for us to understand how and why.
Nicely said. Okay, well, it's a special time. Here with us, the Cowell Clod, Amber Winkler.
Cowell Clod? I mean, Clad.
Oh, sorry. Clad. Thank you. You're not a clad. Cowell Clad. Thank you. I'm a better writer than speaker. Or so I think. The Cowell Clad, Amber Winkler, with her Research Minute. So, Amber, thousands of minutes have elapsed since your last Research Minute.
So I get an overage?
No overage. But
just something better be darn good.
I'm sure your fans have missed you. So what do we have on deck for today?
I have something so timely that's going to relate to our KIPP unionization little discussion at the beginning of the show.
Okay.
So there you go.
Well, let's get started.
Okay. We often criticize charter research because it treats charters like one big entity. Then comes along a new study that seeks to draw some useful distinctions. Out this week is Informing the Debate by Tom Kane and others, and it examines the performance of charter schools and pilot schools in Boston.
Tommy K.
Yes, indeed. Charter schools in this case are defined as we typically think of them. Pilot schools, however, are what the authors call a middle ground between traditional and charter schools, meaning they determine their budgets, curricula, and scheduling, but they're still subject to collective bargaining and seniority protections.
Sounds like KIPP in New York.
Mm-hmm. This rigorous and careful study used 6 years of achievement data in two parallel studies, one of which examined students who participated in the random lottery process and compared those who were and were not offered placement in their desired school.
15 seconds.
A great design. Both studies found large positive effects in English and math for charter schools at both the middle and high school levels. Pilot school data, however, were, quote, inconclusive. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, they performed similar to, on one hand, sorry, give me 10 seconds, they performed similar to charter schools at the high school level in one study, but at the middle school level, one study showed no effects for the pilot schools, and in the other, it showed a negative effect. So, bottom line, the charter schools that retain union-style operations don't do as well as the charter schools that forego union-style operations. So found the study.
Well done, Amber. A little overtime, but we will allow that.
Y'all interrupted me like twice.
That was tight. That was interesting. True. Mike, are you feeling vindicated?
I'm feeling a little bit vindicated.
It seems like recently you were making the case that unionization of charters will be problematic.
That's right. And here's the point, that if charter schools have autonomy from districts and from union contracts, I mean, the pilot schools had some autonomy from the districts, not the unions. It's mm-hmm. a nice experiment. I got to ask both Amber and Rick. It seems like Tom Kane has now been featured in this several times. How big a crush do both of you have on Tom Kane?
I think he does wonderful research, hands down. I'll read any Tom Kane study.
Mm-hmm. I just think he's a good-looking scoundrel.
Wow. Well, I, you know.
And he's got that North Carolina hill demeanor, the way he's all gentle and calm. I just.
Is that right?
I just
we
got a
love fest with this guy.
All right. So Laura, I think we got to put a picture of Tom Kane on the podcast website for our listeners. That'd be nice. Yeah, we could do that. Yeah.
Tommy Kane, maybe.
We should have Tom Kane come on the show sometime.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
That would be great. Okay. We'll try.
Amber could have her celebrity moment.
All right, Amber. Thank you. Oh, and so what's the song? What's the song?
That's right. So since charter schools like to be left alone, and the good ones apparently don't care about unions, we have My Life by Billy Joel.
This is my life. Go ahead with your own life. Leave me alone.
Nice. I like that. That is a good charter school anthem.
There we go.
Isn't there a song somewhere called like Leave Me Alone? That would have been perfect.
Hello, there are copyright laws. We don't have access to every song, but we like this one.
How about Kylie Minogue? I think we're alone now. I think we're alone now.
We try to find the freedom. Remember George Michael, freedom, because you know they like freedom. But anyway, alas, copyright issues.
Speaking of which, Rick, we really should not micromanage Amber's song selection.
Oh, well said. Well said.
Thank you.
Okay. Because we believe in autonomy around
here. We believe in autonomy. Amber Winkler's Research Minute. Thank you, Amber.
But part of autonomy is being able to bellyache and pick and prod after the fact.
This is true. Speaking of autonomy, joining us now is Stafford. It's been a long holiday break. I'm a little rusty. But Stafford, welcome to the show. What do you have for us today on Rate That Reform?
Today I have fish.
Okay. Fish? Sounds promising.
Well, they're caught and filleted and eaten. Mm. And apparently this is a problem. So, you know, we could all become vegetarians. Or, according to PETA, we could call them sea kittens.
Sea kittens.
Oh,
how sweet.
That's right.
Kittens, Mike.
I love kittens.
The people for the ethical treatment of animals would like you to start calling fish sea kittens. Why? Well, the group explains, quote, that we're hoping that by calling fish sea kittens, compassionate people who would never hurt a dog or a cat will realize that fish feel pain and fear just like the furry and winged animals do. So how does this relate to education?
Good question.
Well, I was wondering.
It only took me 30 seconds to get there. If, you know, eradicating the word fish was not enough, PETA now wants schools with fish-themed names to change their names to sea kitten-themed names. So what does this mean? Well, this means that Whitefish Montana High School would become Sea Kitten High School. In fact, PETA sent a letter to the principal of Whitefish High, Ken Paulson, telling him that they would very much appreciate if he would change the name of Whitefish High to Sea Kitten High School. And the director of this initiative explains it this way. Well, schools strive for achievements in academics and sports, so why not add compassion to the list? So it was kind of hard to evaluate this or grade it in any way, shape, or form due to its incredible ridiculousness. But I gave it a double F.
It's hard to come by a double F.
Oh, wow. The feared double F.
You know, one time Fordham gave a state an F- for its science standards, but this sounds even worse.
Has Rate My Reform ever issued a double F before?
I don't think so.
Wow.
The first Rate That Reform in 2009, and it's a double F. Okay, go ahead, Steph.
So, obviously, I highly doubt that the reason that fish are allegedly abused, according to PETA, is because they are called fish, and changing their names would not deter people from eating them. Mm. And I would also like to point out the economic side of this, which is that when you change the name of any institution or anything, there is an economic cost, mm-hmm. namely changing the placards and, mm-hmm. you know, the official stamps and the name of anything.
I have two observations on this that I think are important. One is it's actually misleading because there are different kinds of fish. Mm-hmm. To call them all sea kitten, whether it's a white marlin or a flounder, strikes me as actually educationally unhelpful.
Like some are river kittens, is that what you're saying?
River
kittens is bad because, you know, there's this, I mean, when I think about rivers and kittens, I think about horrible people who try to drown their kittens in a river when they don't want them. So this is good.
That's just you, Mike.
The second problem is that clearly PETA doesn't understand education because they think principals have the autonomy to change the school name on their own. Yeah. They've clearly never actually had a child enrolled in a public school district.
Yeah.
Do they think whales and squids ought to be denoted by the same label and sharks and crayfish so that you just yell sea kitten?
What about
and the lifeguards out there yelling sea kitten, and we don't know if it's a man-eating shark or like a stray crayfish.
And that's a good question. I mean, like high schools in Florida that are named the Sharks, I mean, that's not implying that people are going out eating sharks. All right. Well, thanks for joining us. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Education Gadfly Show at edexcellence.net. Signing off.